Doogie.
Sam.
After 2 weeks down in the dumps, feeling super down bad, we promise to keep it upbeat this week. So let's deliver. Let's talk most improved players this season in the Premier League and beyond.
Who has been the most improved player?
It's Baumgartner! Glorious! That is special!
João Pedro, he's the real deal. He is the truth in my eyes. He can do everything.
Gonçalo Inácio is the perfect centre-back for Liverpool.
James Garner has quietly become one of the most complete players in the Premier League.
Everton's most consistent player by a landslide.
Dan Ballard knows his way around a penalty box at both ends.
Both ends, yeah.
Looks like he knows his way around a gymnasium. Terry-esque.
As Kurstovic dashes through the middle. Kurstovic! And it's two! Two for him, two for Atalanta.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth. I am your host, Sam Tai. Sitting next to me is Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie.
Hello, Sam. Good to be here once again. Slightly delirious. I always feel slightly delirious in Champions League weeks because I do have to get up very early and I do like sleep. I really do like sleep. I don't get very much of it in Champions League weeks, but I am excited to be here. And just about over, Sunderland losing to Port Vale in the FA Cup.
Yeah, come to that in a moment, but it is the focus of the pod. what time did you have to get up this morning?
5.55, oh. Which is just a weird time, although it's much nicer now because it's almost light and I get my big Costa coffee.
So you've set an alarm for 5.55?
Yes.
Do you just like the number 5?
I used to do 6, and then this week I decided 5.55 because every morning this season on a Tuesday or Wednesday in a Champions League week, I've had to literally sprint for the bus, and I just thought, why don't I just walk? But I objected to getting up before a number beginning with 6. So I was just like, no, I'll stick with 6. But today, 5.55, and I walked to the bus and I got on it and it was much smoother.
Okay, yeah. We're learning.
Yeah.
You've been doing this a while.
I have.
These mornings, yeah. Seasons now.
Seasons, yeah, three. But still, there's nothing like a little, you know, run to the bus. I mean, they do come fairly regularly, but it creates a lot of stress if you don't get up at 5.55, as it turns out.
None of this is adding up for me, but never mind. Right, no dark intro for our producer, Jack, today, because Fulham have kicked him harder than I ever could.
Yeah.
You should have seen the state of this boy's tweets at the weekend.
I didn't actually see them.
He was so morose. And for a boy who is usually filled with joy, the human version of a jelly bean, well, this was quite tough to see. Jack, I'm so sorry, but there's only so much a man can take.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate it. It's a nicer intro than I normally get, which is good. Maybe Fulham should lose more. I was deeply disappointed, is probably how I would put it. Talk about how to blow up a season in 5 days. But, you know, onwards and upwards, there's plenty of football to look at that isn't my team, thankfully. It was a bad weekend of football all round because Betis lost as well to Tafe. So yeah. Just not great vibes. But look, at least we could fall back on the rugby.
It's not, nothing, none of that, please. Thank you. back to you there. So, Sunderland obviously lost to Port Vale.
Bottom of League One, Port Vale.
Bottom of League One. It's the upset of the round. Actually, to be honest with you, Southampton winning at Craven Cottage pales in comparison to this. Last week we were sat here and you were genuinely considering a train to Port Vale. Only to find out the cost of it was something like £200.
Yeah.
We have lots of trains here in the UK, but the prices are exorbitant. And Doogie, you wisely swerved this one based on what happened.
Yeah, very wise indeed. I also couldn't be bothered to be blamed for this as well, because I've barely seen a win all season on any game that I've been to from a Sunderland perspective.
It is all about you.
It is all about me. But no, the Critchley curse lived on from my sofa on this occasion. What a lot of Sunderland fans focused on afterwards, which was pretty unfair, was the pitch. And the pitch was like a ploughed field.
It was a bog.
It was really bad. I don't know how wet it's been in the Stoke area. But it
presumably was quite wet.
It was pretty horrible.
Wet all of the UK all year.
Yeah. But it was just really, really bad. But having said that, you've got to play the conditions. And we didn't at all. And Port Vale were by far the better side. Like, we can't really have any complaints. And so many of our attacking players, we played pretty much our full strength side that was fit. A lot of players have been playing throughout our Premier League campaign this year, and we just really didn't show up, particularly the likes of Talby, Mayenda. We really didn't knit anything together, and we kept on trying to build up from the back in this ploughed field, like 80 yards from their goal. And then eventually Luke 09 kind of gets fouled and boots the ball back to where he tries to Elborg, but he gets a push in the back at the same time. Eventually goes to a corner and they score off the corner. But that's not the whole story. They really did deserve to go through, and I can't really have any complaints.
The pass is preposterous.
It's pretty hilarious,
it is,
isn't it?
Insane. Forces his own goalkeeper into a header over his own bar for like a 40-yard clip ball back. It's remarkable stuff. If that had gone in, we finally got a successor to that Lee Dixon. Is it Lee Dixon back pass, the own goal?
The best Sunderland ones from the mid-90s. Against Southampton, I think. And he kind of volleys it in from the edge of the area is my favourite own goal, or least favourite own goal from a Sunderland perspective, at least.
Well, this is my favourite nearly own goal.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Just to complete the set and just to compound the overall FA Cup misery.
We don't like it, on the truth.
No, we don't. We hate this tournament. Villa didn't make it this far in the FA Cup. They were removed from the tournament unceremoniously. The previous round against Newcastle, as you'll probably remember, because Marco Bizot decided the old adage, nothing silly just before half time, lads, does not apply to him. And he came steaming out and took out a Newcastle player, got a red card, and Villa surrendered a one goal lead into a 3-1 loss. That was pretty rubbish. But really, the damage was done in the round before that when Villa beat Tottenham. That was the game in which Boubacar Camara was fouled by Joao Polinha and he tore his PCL. So the FA Cup has not been very kind to any of us in this room.
No,
to me, to you, to Jack, to no one.
Although maybe if you had got through against Newcastle, you'd have another game, obviously, against City or any other opponent you would have drawn. And you've got a big Europa League week this week as well.
So. Yeah, well, this podcast comes out on a Friday. I guess we'll find out how Villa got on in Lille on the Thursday night. We don't know yet. Currently, confidence is at an all-time low. But you never know. Lille aren't all that, he says.
Touch wood.
Right. Just before we move to the main topic, which you'll be relieved to hear is not actually a post-mortem on the Port Vale result. It's about, most improved players. I just want to bring up the fact that this week, Doogie, this week of all weeks, I wish you liked your NFL.
Oh, nice.
Because the week that we have just experienced in the NFL is the sort of thing that I just think you would absolutely love if we had the equivalent in football.
Go for it. Give me the lowdown.
It was free agency this week.
Okay.
So, as you probably know, there's really only, roughly speaking, there's only one way to enter the NFL, which is through the draft. There are exceptions, but basically everyone gets drafted. And then there's really only two ways you can move teams. You get traded for a pick or another player or a combination, or you run down your contract, it gets to the end of your deal, and you just sign for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know
how long are deals in the NFL?
Anywhere between 2 and 5 years.
Okay, sort of classic.
Usually, unless you're a quarterback, and sometimes you can get a 6-7 deal. But anyway, typically speaking, you're talking about 3 or 4 years. So the player turnover is quite heavy, and all the players that are set to leave their teams, they get to a Monday in March where it's free agency. And then at midday on the Monday, everybody's contract just basically finishes and they hit the market. And in the space of about 48 hours, well over 100 players move teams.
Oh, this sounds epic.
And they just start, and you just start getting alerts. So you've got all the big journalists have got their fingers on the pulse, and you just get a bombardment of alerts. Imagine a combination of Romano and Ornstein and DiMarzio and Plettenberg and Dean Jones, all in the space of 48 hours sending you 150 alerts, and it's this person's moved to this team, he signed a $120 million 4-year deal, this person's moved here, this person's moved here. And if you're a fan of the team, you go in knowing which players their contracts are going to finish, and you knowing which areas of the pitch you'd quite like to reinforce. You have no idea what's in store. And then suddenly you just get an alert that says, your team have signed a new centre.
He signed
a $25 million deal over 3 years. Congrats, you've got this guy. And you're like, oh, cool, so we've got a centre now. And then 3 hours later, your defensive end leaves.
This sounds like transfer deadline day, except things actually happen. And transfer deadline day before Twitter, where we knew exactly what was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, basically, it's transfer deadline day on steroids.
Yeah.
And without most of the prior information.
Yeah.
So real big hitters, you're going to get a rough idea of like what they're going to go for, who they might go to. But for the vast majority of the players, they just sign for a new team like that. And you just get an alert that just goes, oh, this guy's signed here. $120 million, $150 million, whatever it might be.
And who did the Lions end up with? Are we happy with our haul?
I mean, look, it's still going.
So wait, are we still in it now?
Oh, it's still going, yeah. But it takes you know, all the big hitters, the really big moves, you know, they get swarmed.
Yeah.
Early in the week, bang. And then there's loads of other players that sort of assess their options.
The small fish comes to the table. Yeah,
wait and see what happens. The Lions lost a good linebacker. Ooh. They lost a good cornerback, but gained a new center.
Okay. And I don't know positions, but that sounds like a loss.
Well, it depends, because obviously...
What's the center? Where did the center play?
He's the guy that stands in front of the quarterback and snaps in the ball. He's very important.
I always think that role looks quite easy.
No, goodness me.
We've got an NFL novice here.
Yeah, this is not an NFL podcast, as you can tell. The common wisdom is that the smartest guy on the team is the quarterback.
Yes.
The second smartest guy on the team is the center.
Oh, he stands
there. He stands there and he has to do all sorts of stuff. Anyway, look, we're getting too into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But this flurry of activity, hundreds of deals happening over the course of 48 hours, it is one of the genuine joys. And I think you would love it.
You're right.
It's probably the number one reason you should enjoy the NFL.
Yeah, I think I might get into it purely for that week. I'm already excited for the transfer window this year. I love the transfer window.
There you go. Right. Okay. Let's talk about our football.
Yes.
You might know a few things about these guys.
Let's talk a little bit more.
let's talk improved players.
Yeah.
We promised to keep it light, mm-hmm. light and airy and positive after 2 weeks where things have been pretty dark. So we've picked three players each that we think have hugely improved this season. Now, there are definitely more than six players in the world that have improved this season, but these are our personal picks. I'll give you the floor first.
Okay, I picked two non-Premier League ones, one nice. Premier League one, and I've got a couple of honourable mentions at the end. But yeah, as Sam says, there are so many different options that I could have gone down, so many different routes. I generally tried to pick players that did play the majority of last year. You know, they weren't injured and then suddenly turned up this year. They had to kind of show a real improvement.
Yeah, I did that too, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought the best case that I could probably think of outside of the Premier League was Christoph Baumgartner.
Oh, nice.
At RB Leipzig. Now, a lot of people at RB Leipzig watching RB Leipzig this summer, kind of feared for them a bit this year. You know, if you lose Benjamin Šeško, if you lose Xavi Simmons, if you lose Openda as well, all in the same summer, it did feel like it was going to be quite difficult for RB Leipzig to remain competitive. But they are the masters of selling. They always sell effectively. They've always got an idea of who they want to come in next. But of their big money signings last summer, very few have really worked out. Yan Diamande has been a huge success, but Johan Bakayoko's played about 700 league minutes. He's had a few injury issues. Konrad Harder's not really been picked in the side as well. Romelu's shown moments for sure and does look like a real promising talent.
I think Romelu's been good.
I agree. I think he's been fairly decent,
yeah.
But he's not been a kind of superstar in the making just yet, I would say. Yan Diamande looks like the most exciting and he looks absolutely phenomenal.
Of course.
But Christoph Baumgartner signed from Hoffenheim in 2023. So this is his second season there for 25 million euros. And he joined from Hoffenheim in his final three seasons there. He got 20 goals and 8 assists in 93 league games. So 28 goals and assists in 93 games. Looked like a decent player, but you probably didn't expect what's subsequently happened. Last year at Leipzig, much more of a bit part player. So he has 18 league starts, but 13 off the bench, 2 goals and 1 assist in the league. That's it. 2 goals, 1 assist. This year, though, he's been a near ever present. He's already played 350 more minutes than he did in the entirety of last year. 23 league starts, 10 goals and 6 assists in 24 games. Only the Bayern boys, the Bayern trio of Kane, Elise and Luis Diaz have been directly involved in more Bundesliga goals. And he's played a direct role in 33% of RB Leipzig's league goals. And I look at Christoph Baumgartner, and in a different way to Xavi Simmons, who I think is a more complete all-round player and can probably play a little bit deeper, more effectively, Baumgartner just seems to have that knack of right place, right time. And it's a really good trait. I think it's underrated in today's game as well. You know, if you look at his underlying numbers, there's nothing particularly absolutely mind-blowing. You know, he's taking 2.6 shots per 90 for an attacking midfielder striker. You want that to be above 3. He's creating 1.4 chances per 90. That's up from 1.1. But whereas last year, Šeško and Simmons would be kind of sort of combining from a little bit deeper, and Šeško would be running onto through balls and Simmons would be kind of pulling the strings, Baumgartner has been in the right place at the right time generally to profit off the work of Yan Diamande, who can beat players on either side, on either foot, from either wing as well. And he's been slightly more involved in play as well. His pass completion's gone up slightly, but it's just simply his effectiveness in front of goal and just picking up those right positions and carrying an RB Leipzig side that, yes, Yandy Amande's been a phenomenal success, but no one thought he'd necessarily be at this level just yet. He'd played, I think it was about 500 league minutes for Leganés last year, never played at this level before. So between Diamande and Baumgartner, they've kept RB Leipzig competitive, and I think Baumgartner's a real feel-good story.
Yeah, I think for him to get 10 league goals this season and counting, considering that he is very rarely a part of the front three, is a hell of an achievement. Mm. Because the front three, I mean, you think about where the goals get apportioned, and like naturally the striker and Diamande and Nusa and Bakayoko are going to take your lion's share. There have been times where Baumgartner's played, I've seen him play in a midfield three, I've seen him play in a midfield two. So if you're playing in a two with three players ahead of you, at least, your chief responsibility is not going to be goals. So for him to put up those numbers in these situations and taking a really big share off a lot of those players, you know, you're talking about how Romulo hasn't pulled up too many trees and how Bakayoko's been in and out and not hugely impressive. Sure, I mean, actually, part of this is Baumgartner's fault because he's taking the share of goals and assists that they would probably expect to have. Now, that's very impressive. And in terms of like a leap year on year, I can't really disagree. He actually didn't come on my radar, but now you've said it, it seems really obvious.
It's been a good one for him so far. Right, who was yours first, Sam?
I've gone two Premier League and one European. League sandwich.
Cool, cool.
So first piece of bread.
Nice.
Here. It's Premier League.
I love bread.
Shut up.
Bit of a catch, wasn't it?
It's Joao Pedro.
Nice.
It's Joao Pedro. Now, there's like a common theme in all my three picks, which is something fairly major has changed. Mm-hmm. And with Pedro, the natural footballing ability was never in doubt. Like, I think anybody who has seen Joao Pedro play football in the last 4 years just looks at him and goes, baller. Like, he's obviously amazing. But when you end up costing £60 million and you end up moving to a super club, certain things are expected of you. And I went back to my ESPN transfer grades over the summer to see what I'd written about the deal, just to get a feeling of like how I felt about it at the time. Because obviously, it was 8 months ago. It was ages ago, right? And basically what I wrote was this. His game is far more subtle than Delap's or Jackson's, and perhaps he's the closest thing to Roberto Firmino we've seen in the Premier League since Roberto Firmino. He's good for about 10 goals, then offers much more in terms of playmaking flicks and chance creation. I think that was very fair.
Absolutely.
Very fair on Joao Pedro after he came to England and scored 9, 11, 9 and 10 goals in each of his four seasons. About 10. Can't really fault the maths on that one, can you? I may not be good at maths, but I can do rough averages. Well, at the time of speaking, 14 Premier League goals, 5 assists, and then 3 in the Champions League. He plays again before this podcast is released, so we'll see what he does. And if you wrap in his FA Cup and his Club World Cup, he's already over 20 for his time at Chelsea, and he joined in June. That's a leap. So he's a fantastic player. He's phenomenal. And anybody that was watching him at Watford in the Championship, just tearing the second tier a new one, like obviously a really good player, still only scored 11 goals that year. And he's kind of gone from this player that just looks brilliant, but sort of one of those players you're like, oh, he's very talented. You can play across the forward line. Now you're like, Joao Pedro, Premier League striker, Roberto Firmino, second coming. I'm absolutely like very confident and very comfortable saying that. Whereas before I was kind of hinting at it, like, he might be the closest thing we've seen since. He just is. Mm. And the goal-scoring pedigree that he is developing, for me, just shooting up in my estimations.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. I think even more so since Liam Rosinha's come in. And the kind of videos that I see coming out of Chelsea every now and again. And, you know, even if you don't support a club, I sometimes watch, like, training videos on Twitter, just, like, clips, etc. And you see Liam Rosinha, like, arm around Joao Pedro. You've seen post-match interviews where they're kind of joking with each other. They seem to have a really, really good relationship. And, you know, that performance away at Napoli, I thought was particularly impressive. Mm. Like, Napoli haven't been great this year by any stretch and, you know, have struggled with a lot of injuries, and Conte has a terrible Champions League record. But two goals in the Maradona,
yep,
with everything on the line, that was super impressive. And then a hat-trick recently, big goal at the weekend against Wrexham. I know it's only Wrexham, but Chelsea was struggling in that game as well. And I think I saw it earlier that only Cole Palmer, since Eden Hazard left, has ever scored more goals in a league season for Chelsea. So since, what, 2019? So he's already in very good territory and can easily surpass that in the next two months of the season still to go, 2.5. So well played, João Pedro.
Thank you for not mentioning who the hat-trick was against. Okay, Doogie, who is your second
I'd actually
player?
Momentarily forgotten that. Right, my next one. I mean, we're focusing a lot on forwards. My next one is actually a defender, my final one. But I wanted to shout out Nikola Krstović at Atalanta. This is a player that I didn't take all that much notice of before he joined Atalanta because he was playing for Lecce. Although perhaps we all should take a little bit more focus on Lecce because Lecce helped develop Patrick Dorgu. Krstović has also turned into a really good player as well. But he's a 25-year-old Montenegrin forward that's in his third year in Serie A. He played 2 years before for Lecce. He scored 18 league goals in 72 games, which doesn't sound all that impressive, but he was playing for a Lecce side that finished 14th and 17th.
Sorry, I mean, I watched a bit of Lecce when I was scouting Dorgu, and they were dreadful.
It's not a good side.
Because Morten Hjulmand came through Lecce as
it's
well.
A good
they
show.
Scout very good players.
Very good show.
But they never have enough of them around at the same time to be any good.
Mm.
So,
and it was an interesting time to join Atalanta because, A, Gasperini was leaving, the kind of forward whisperer, as it were. Everyone always explodes under him. So that was a little bit of a challenge.
Gasparade, they call it.
Yeah, exactly. And they also lost Retegi, who went to Qatar, who was the league's top scorer last year with 25 goals. And Lookman's future was also uncertain, although Lookman eventually stayed until January and then went to Atletico Madrid, but was in a bit of a mood with Atalanta for the first half of this season. So not the easiest scenario to walk in on. And Scamacca was coming back from a big injury as well. But I think he's been really impressive, particularly so in the last couple of months. I mean, he's on 9 goals and 6 assists now in 37 games for Atalanta. And Atalanta have only lost one of their last 11 league games. And Krstović in that run has scored 5 goals. He scored the same amount of league goals as Marcus Thuram, who hasn't been at his normal best, but Orsolini's also scored that amount. Berardi, regular goal scorers in Serie A. And given the fact he was arriving from Lecce, having never played for a club of this size, also experiencing the European League calendar for the first time as well, I've been pretty impressed. And actually, his underlying numbers suggest that it is really sort of transferable or continuable, let's say, or sustainable is the word I'm looking for, because his shots have gone from 4 per 90 to 5.5. That is by far the most in Serie A.
That is loads.
Yeah, crazy amounts. The next most in Serie A is Moise Kean, who always takes a lot of shots and last year was an amazing finisher. This year has been poor by his own standards up until the last couple of months as well, but he's on 4.8. His chances created have nearly doubled. His dribbles per 90 have doubled and his XG per 90 is now up to 0.87, which is topped only by Marlon in Serie A, and Marlon only joined in January, so it's a much smaller sample size. And that's the same as Erling Haaland in the Premier League. And when I watch Krstović, this is a guy of not that many outstanding physical qualities. You know, he's not particularly tall. I don't think he's particularly rapid, but he pulls off his markers really effectively. He's very good at getting separation, and he's a really clean ball striker, which is what always strikes me with him. Very, very, yeah, clean connector, pure striker. Very good at getting into the corners as well and can create a little bit from wide as well when he pulls into that left channel. So I've been really, really impressed with him. He does have another game before this, like João Pedro, against Bayern Munich in the Champions League. I think that's going to be pretty tough for Atalanta, despite their victory against Dortmund. They've never kept a clean sheet in a Champions League knockout game, which is a pretty crazy stat.
Someone was up early on the news doing Champions League coverage.
Someone had their blazer on this morning. But Bayern Munich, you know, have been, yeah, very, very impressive in this year's Champions League once again. I do expect them to kind of quite easily get past Atalanta, despite the fitness concerns of Harry Kane. But maybe Krstović can do something at some stage in that tie, but it feels a little bit unlikely. But he definitely deserves credit for being someone that went under my radar when he joined, and I've been impressed.
Nice. Well, I learned a lot just there. And looking at his career path, there's plenty more in store for him. He started in Montenegro, popped off to Serbia, then found himself in the Slovak top tier, only to be found by Lecce. Maybe we should be paying more attention to what Lecce are doing.
He was
scouting.
He was brilliant in the Slovak top tier. He scored an inordinate amount of goals. And I can't remember the name of the side that he was playing for, but they've never won a title. And he very, very nearly took them to the title.
That's my boy.
And there was a great James Horncastle article on him maybe 2.5 years ago when he signed for Lecce. And it was basically like, oh, they went out with the intention of spending sort of 10 million euros on him. They got him 3.8. and they were like, oh, okay, cool. That's a really interesting one. He started really hot at Lecce. He cooled off because the team cooled off. But he was like, he's a much more polished player than I think people give him credit for. He runs the channels, I think, really, really well. Mm. And whilst it hasn't been the easiest season having to kind of rotate with Scamacca, I do think he's a very, very talented player and nowhere quite near his ceiling yet. So, yeah, I like this pick a lot.
Very nice. Very nice. The team in question, Dunajska Streda, by the looks of it. DAC, Dunajska Streda.
Titans.
Yes, well, there you go. All right. The bread is in place. I've Let's buttered get to the bread. Filling. I've buttered the and now it's the filling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Portuguese sandwich.
Ooh.
Because the player in question is Gonçalo Inácio.
A Bifana.
A Bifana indeed. Gonçalo Inácio of Sporting. Now, he might be Portugal's next great centre-back, but he wasn't supposed to be. I'm fairly sure Portugal's next great centre-back was supposed to be António Silva of Benfica, who shot to the fore at like 18. And we were all very excited about him. And he was obviously playing first team football every single week at 17, 18. And generally speaking, when you're doing that for one of Portugal's big clubs, I mean, João Neves, João Moutinho, there's a lot of examples here of players breaking through very early at that age. Cristiano Ronaldo, that's the third one I came to. And then becoming very, very good. But Silva has massively stalled out. And in his place has risen Inácio, who's kind of just stepped into that Pepe José Font kind of mold and said, "Yep, I'm going to be starting for Portugal and one of the top defenders in this league." And he is now 24 years of age. He is completing his sixth full professional season, and he has 19 caps for Portugal. No one bats an eyelid when he plays a key qualifier or just a really important game. He'll go to the World Cup and he'll play, and he's left-footed. And it was. I'm starting to get to this point now where, like, okay, people are not going to be able to ignore Inácio for much longer. And the key here, the big change, it's something Jack and I have spoken about on and off, really, just over the last couple of months, just casually. He has moved from a back three system to a back four. And for so many people, that just answers so many questions that they probably weren't willing to gamble on beforehand. Because if you play in a back three as a centre-back, you get a lot of help. Systematic, sure, but the spaces you have to cover are smaller and the role is different. A lot of players look really, really good in a back three and then they move to a back four and it's just a lot harder and they don't look anywhere near as good. So I think football in general has a bit of a hesitancy around these players. So for him to just slot into a back four this season after the back of not just this season before as well, but the coaching change off the back of Ruben Amorim obviously leaving Sporting, and for him to just... he just knocks it out of the park. You know, just brilliant again. Hasn't skipped a beat. I think all those questions are starting to disappear. And I think for a centre-back like him, to answer those questions is a huge step. It's a massive improvement. To convert from a back three to a back four so seamlessly, this is a big upgrade. This is a big step forward. And that's why I consider him a hugely improved player, because he's a hugely improved prospect. Like, his stock is massively improved. And in terms of Inácio himself as a skill set, that he can operate high up. He's a good all-rounder in that sense. He's a good defender. He's also just one of the best long-range passers from that position that you will find in Europe. And particularly with the left foot, I would really struggle to find a player across Europe who can ping a long-range switch with his left as well as Inácio, which is just one of the most attractive things in football.
It really is.
Isn't it?
It really is. That's a very good shout as well. And I was keen not to, on this podcast, at least with my suggestions, constantly talk about the summer and who could move where, but left-footed centre-backs.
Yeah, I mean,
Nico
it's
Schlotterbeck's always high up a lot of people's lists. Inácio will be high up people's lists. Pau Torres is apparently high up people's lists as well. So I think he'll
be
Marco Senesi. I think he'll be in the discussion for a lot of clubs. I think that was a good suggestion. Right, I am going back to, after my trip to Leipzig and Atalanta, the more sort of niche clubs, I'm going to Sunderland because I have to give a shout out to a player that I didn't expect to be as good as he has been this year.
Ooh, can we guess? Jack, get your microphone, get your...
I'd put £100 on this being Dan Ballard.
Sam?
Oh, I don't know if I want to take that bet because that is a good suggestion. Let me just need to look at the squad. It's not going to be in the forwards. Xhaka can't really be improved. Like, No, yeah, it's going to be Dan Ballard.
It is Dan Ballard, the big man. It has to be Dan Ballard. It really has to be, because people forget that he only featured in 23 championship games last season, 15 as a starter. A lot of that was due to injury. He missed 29 games with injury. He actually only played 30 minutes of our final 12 league games of the regular season. So he went into the playoffs half fit, played every minute, scored that massive goal against Coventry to get us to the final. In the final, Luke O'Nien then gets injured as well. So there was so much disruption to that back line. But this season, he's been a pretty much ever-present. He was in and out the side early doors due to selection, and we were trying to work out who our sort of starting duo was. Now it's Ballard and Alderete. And actually, Alderete had a really difficult spell around kind of Christmas time, maybe overcomplicating it a little bit. Ballard has really kind of taken this defence, particularly with Mukiele having been injured for the last couple of weeks as well. And he's been absolutely exceptional for a side that, yeah, don't necessarily play or don't necessarily defend the most. It's not the most complicated star to fit in at, but the way he can put his head in front of everything. And his body in front of everything. It's so impressive. He's Sunderland's eighth most used player this season for a guy that had never played in the Premier League before. Signed actually in our first year in the Championship after a decent year with Millwall. But he's been absolutely brilliant. And his numbers this year have really exploded. So his tackle success rate has gone from 78%, very solid, to 88%. That's brilliant. His long balls per game, he's completing one more per game. He's now winning 60% of his aerial duels.
Only 60?
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well, but he's competing in a lot of them.
Yeah.
At both ends of the pitch as well.
He competes against his own teammates.
Exactly. And despite only ranking eighth for league minutes, he's second only by two for clearances behind Alderete in the Sunderland squad. That's seventh best in the Premier League. Only Alderete has completed more blocks. Alderete has played more football than him as well. And he's 26 years old. He's played 115 games now for Sunderland. We were really intelligent, I think, to tie him down to that new deal, which is to 2029 with an option of a further year. And look, maybe clubs will look at him this summer. I don't quite know where his ceiling is. And maybe it is someone that you do, you know, look to upsell after an amazing year. Like, his value might never really be higher and his stock might never be higher. But it's a sort of situation where if he hadn't declared for Northern Ireland, I think he'd be getting loose. And I'm not necessarily saying, you know, he should be on that. He would have been on the plane for England. But I think he would have been in the conversation on the basis of his performances so far. But I'm not sure whether he scales up to an Arsenal, a Liverpool, a Man City per se, but he is going to be a very solid Premier League defender.
He doesn't look like a Thomas Tuchel centre back to me, but that might just be being mean. Look, the fact that he is declared for Northern Ireland will go over most people's heads, so I'm sure he still gets England hype.
Yeah,
because
I've seen it on Twitter. He's got to get in.
People will still want him to, and they won't realise that he is not eligible any longer. So that won't stop it. That won't stop it at all. Cool, Dan Ballard, yeah.
He feels a bit Lewis Dunkey.
I was going to say, so
I feel like that's the kind of like go up the leagues with a team and then suddenly you're there and you might be there for 10 years, but there will also always be links to other clubs.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't know where it scales up to, what kind of links or what kind of... Don't take this the wrong way, but like nothing has ever screamed more West Ham than this. Like,
yeah, I know
for the
mean.
Same reason that West Ham wanted Harry Maguire. You know, like a David Moyes centre-back. Like, this is what Dan Ballard looks like to me. One of those proper, like, physical enforcer, no-nonsense types. And so West Ham looks like... It's like 40 million to West Ham is the sort of thing that I could envision.
Yeah, when Harry Maguire was like sixth choice under Amorim or fifth choice under Amorim and was out of contract in the summer, and he's still out of contract in the summer, but it looks like Man United probably, well, I don't know for sure. They might well extend.
And
he's now a starter at Man United. I don't think Dan Ballard goes into Man United, but could he be fifth choice at a club like Man United and actually do a job if called upon?
I hope not.
Yeah,
he doesn't either.
You know what I mean? We don't want that. He won't be on next year's most improved list if he goes and plays fifth choice football for Man United.
I love him. I think he's been brilliant this year.
Sounds great. Okay. Well, I'm going to finish this off with a Premier League player. So that's the final slice of bread on top to complete the sandwich. It's James Garner.
Yeah.
Who...
Good shout.
Jack and I discussed a little bit on a Ranks episode a couple of weeks ago on the overrated, underrated section. But it's time to give him a little bit more love because the stats are amazing, but also... I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? I talk about it all the time, but when you see a player who plays against your team and they boss it, and you're like, oh, you're good. You're really good. It happened. James Garner at Villa Park. It very much happened. The big change, I think, here, to key in on my kind of like my reasoning for each player, the big change with Garner is he's been a part of this Everton team for a while, fine, a couple of seasons. He's gone from a good midfielder who... could very likely find himself playing fullback because Everton were short a player, and that's fine. James Garner can slot in there. Yeah. He's gone from that to an excellent midfielder that you would be loath to move out of midfield. Like, he can now he can cover at fullback, and he did so recently. He did it again. But you've gone from happy to move Garner to fullback to, oh, have we got any other options? Because he's quite important to us now. Again, that's just a little sign of that growing importance of a player in a team, in a system, in a culture. And his stats, I mean, you've been quoting stats all evening, Doogie, and I've strayed away from them for the most part, but get a load of this for Garner. Bear in mind, it is influenced by the fact that he's played the third most minutes in the squad behind only Jordan Pickford, goalkeeper, and James Tarkowski, who never gets injured and never gets subbed and is like one of the most common iron men in the league. He's still only about 50 minutes off Tarkowski. But Garner has the most tackles, the most interceptions, and the most recoveries of all Everton players. He's the most chances created and the highest expected assists, and he has the most touches and the most passes. Whew! So that's defences, creative, and possession volume. And for what it's worth, he's top of the entire Premier League for combined tackles and interceptions, really? With 97. Behind him is Caicedo at 92 and Elliot Anderson at 86. Garner has the most in the entire league.
Elite company.
Now, it's not, look, this whole game isn't played on spreadsheets as we know, but his influence across so many different areas of the pitch here, so many different categories, is undeniable. Add to the fact that when you watch him, he's very smart, moves into the right spots, receives the ball, moves it on, good press resistance. I can see why Everton fans are saying he has to be in the March squad. Tuchel has to give him a look, because that final midfielder spot or the final two midfielder spots, they do feel a little bit open. And Garner he's just launching his campaign at the right time, isn't he? Started printing posters and now he's hanging them up. And we'll see. I mean, I would be surprised if he doesn't get a look here. I would be really surprised, because it would reflect a tremendous season for him.
100%. There's some really high quality midfielders outside of the traditional biggest clubs, you know, Anderson, Wharton, yeah. Stacks, another one as well. I think you could probably pick out a couple of Fulham players, Granit Xhaka, of course, as well. Yeah, I totally agree. I think he's been absolutely brilliant this year. And it's always nice to see someone that has been jettisoned by a bigger club really start to kind of own their spot in a Premier League side and start to deliver. I had a couple of honourable mentions just to round off the episode.
I found my three and I was happy with them, so yeah. I didn't do that. But
I considered a couple. I considered Igor Thiago, but I said at the top that I didn't want to include someone that was injured for the whole entirety of last year.
And then you did Dan Ballard, so you went back
but
on that.
But then I did Dan Ballard, but Dan Ballard wasn't injured for the entirety. But yes, it's a good point, actually. I did kind of go back on that. But either way...
I also looked at Thiago and just thought, injured? No.
Yeah, I just think
maybe
it's really
cool. Maybe
he was
this good this time last year. I don't know.
Maybe. But I just think it's really cool to score, 29 goals in his final season in Belgium, miss an entire year, and then be on 21 goals in 31 games this year for Brentford, for a Brentford side that many people thought would go down. I think it's an amazing story.
Maybe he was this good.
Yeah.
The stats are pointing us that way.
Another,
but fair play, Igor Thiago.
Another player who used to play in the Premier League and made next to no impact, making another impact in another league, Keenan Davis at Udinese.
Oh.
Have you seen this guy? I mean, I don't necessarily think he's improved dramatically as a player, and I think it does speak to a lot of attacking players.
Has
in Serie A
Has he scored more than one goal
year.
Recently? He's then scored he's
nine,
definitely improved.
Nine
yeah.
Serie A goals. Only Lautaro Martinez has scored more in the entire league. And I know Vlahovic and Openda and David and Marcus Thuram and Liao's been slightly off it compared to his usual best as well. It's not been a great year for Serie A attackers, but Keenan Davis scoring nine goals for Udinese when he wasn't known as a goal scorer at Villa, at Watford.
He was known as the opposite.
Forest, exactly. I think that's pretty impressive from Keenan Davis. And my final shout, I've never really rated Julian Ryerson or Daniel Svensson, the Dortmund wingbacks. But Ryerson, in fairness to him, he's got 14 assists this year in 33 games. It's pretty impressive. That includes four assists in one game against Mainz. Four assists in one game.
He's pumping his numbers on set pieces, though, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's doing a Nico Paz doogie.
It's still impressive, though. And only Michael Olise can top his 11 Bundesliga assists. So I think that's pretty impressive from Julian Ryerson, who I don't think is a phenomenal player, but he's definitely had a decent year.
It's 14 assists.
14 assists.
I mean, that is like...
In all competitions.
DeMarco has roughly this, and he's like the most creative player of all time.
Yeah.
So, like...
It's pretty impressive.
I think it's fair to say that Ryerson's having a...
I think DeMarco might be on something like 15 or 16. And DeMarco's been been, I think, the outstanding player in Serie A so far this season.
I'm surprised no one put DeMarco in to their chouts here.
Because he's class, always has been, mate.
Yes, but last year there were people framing DeMarco as the man who was responsible for Inter's demise in the Champions League final.
And
this year, I'm with Doogie, he's Serie A player of the year. As long as Inter don't muck it up from here, I don't see how anyone really gets past him.
Yeah.
That's a big shout. The other one I wanted to throw in was Flo Balogun.
Yeah,
at Monaco. He has now scored more goals this season than his previous two seasons combined. And I was listening to a couple of people talking about his improved hold-up play and how it's kind of brought Monaco to this place. I mean, obviously they beat PSG last weekend, but they've been on a cracking run of form, really, since that hammering they took at the hands of Madrid in the Champions League. They had like a team meeting the next day, and I don't think they've lost in the league since. And obviously that win over PSG felt like the culmination of a couple of very good performances against them. Balogun has been absolutely red hot at the top of the pitch, and obviously a good thing for any US listeners who are tuned into this. But I really do think his campaign this season has been pretty spectacular.
I like it.
Fantastic. Well, that was nice, wasn't it?
Very positive.
I promised light and airy.
I feel better.
I meant the topic. I meant the nature of my bread and my sandwich.
Your sandwich shack got me hungry as well.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. Well, I'm delighted to bring some positivity to the world after two very dark weeks. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I will take a hop, skip and a jump out of this studio rather than sauntered shoulders, head bowed.
Into Galatasaray Liverpool.
Yes, absolutely.
No that's spoilers, right. Guys.
Yeah. Goodness me, no. Right. All that's left to do is to say thank you, Diggy.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Jack.
Always a pleasure, Samuel.
And thank you for listening. We will see you same time next week.